You should have your Bibles once again open to Romans chapter 12 and verse 9. And in our final little session here tonight, we need to nail down and hopefully deal with, put to rest this first sentence of verse 9 that I now come to understand and appreciate. I actually have for a while, but now that I've got it correctly out there, that when Paul says, let love be without dissimulation, it was important that we dealt with what we did in our last session, because it is critical that you get an appreciation for the context and how powerful of a thing it is to be able to bring that to bear upon the way words are used. And it does get real dicey and it gets real critical, and it all the more makes me so, you know, makes me realize that I'm not qualified to be a translator, and so appreciative of what I hold in my hand and the product of those geniuses, those translators that translated this. And again, I can't wait to shake hands one day with the man who translated Romans for us into our English language and properly chose this word dissimulation. Well, what I'm after and what we need to now move on to doing now is, granted, as we look at the word dissimulation, we recognize it is a word we rarely use. In fact, it's a, like so many words, it's a very contextually sensitive word. And I don't know if you've got the OED. When I talk about the OED, I'm talking about the Oxford English Dictionary. I'm not talking about a condensed version. There is a version out there called a, yeah, well, no, it's there's another word than condensed. Abridged. Yeah, not the abridged. The condensed version is actually okay, but they've taken 20 to 22 volumes, and they've shrunk the size of the letters down so much that they could actually squeeze it into two volumes. It's impossible to read with your eye, even if they're 20-20. So it comes with it a magnifying glass, and you have to read it. And that's how I use the an OED. That's what I used for about a year or so, and then I wised up and I got the computerized version. But if you've got the OED, you'll find the word dissimulation in there, and you'll find various definitions to that word, which is what the dictionary is designed to do, define, not describe, but it defines it. And you'll find that if you read through some of those things, you start to appreciate how sensitive this word really is to context. And it is a context-sensitive word. In our Bible, in some form or another, not the word dissimulation, but like dissimulate, dissemble, in the various forms, this word only occurs seven times in your entire Bible. It only occurs twice as dissimulation. Once here, and once over in Galatians chapter 2. And if you're thinking through Galatians there, you immediately know that, oh, okay, Galatians 2 is when Paul's talking about his meeting with Peter at Antioch, when Paul went there to update all the other apostles on the dispensational change that had been made and all the ramifications of this dispensation of grace. And that's where Peter got involved in dissimulating. He, in fact, the actual word there, when Paul's rebuking Peter there at Antioch, he says, you don't need to turn there, but we're going to come back to this a little later on. He says, and the other Jews dissembled likewise with him, with Peter, insomuch that Barnabas was also carried away with their dissimulation. So it sounds like, and rightly so, it's not a good thing. That's why Paul says, let love be without it. And in recognizing what a dissimulation really is, it will validate this exhortation of the first sentence of verse 9, is that it really is an exhortation to us to not let godly selfless love just be only what verses 3 through 8 and have provided for. And again, what God is driving at is that it is. If you have let love be without whatever, without dissimulation, then you it's very possible that godly love even can be or can exist with dissimulation. That is, it can exist all on its own with only that one major feature to it. But in order for godly love to do what it's designed to do in the remainder of our instruction of wisdom, it has to have both of those together. And they do go together, and they're designed to be together. Even though you can talk about one in one instance and one in another, you can talk about selflessness by itself, or you could talk about kindness by itself. But when you're talking about what comprises godly love, those two have to go together. And therefore, in order for love to do what it's designed to do, you're exhorted to go ahead and get this second major feature to it, to go along with that first one, and you have to have the two to get done and to have the effectual working of the other components to our instruction of wisdom, the third, the fourth, the fifth, and sixth components to our instruction of wisdom there in Romans chapter 12 and verse 11 on down through verse 16. So the word dissimulation now, all right, let me ask you this, could you define it without using the word hypocrisy? Did you say hiding under a false pretense? A hiding? Yep. But see how close to hypocrisy that is, though? Just out of curiosity, where did you get that? The OED? Yeah, if you'd have gone down to the next one. No, on down. I'm not sure how yours is laid out. Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. Did it? Well, oftentimes you're going to find that, and you're going to find... that's why what's nice about the big one is exhaustive, and it goes down to the next most common. Well, let's see if we can zero in on this a little bit more without even consulting a dictionary. Let's try this. The word dissimulation is made up of a prefix, an English prefix, dis, D-I-S, or as you need to spell it here with two S's, but the dis prefix, the English prefix dis, means not. And by the way, that parallels that an, that on, or the alpha privative, without. That's why the reason the word without is actually associated with dissimulation, and in the Greek it's one word. But let love be not, dis, not. And then we have the word simulation. Now before we put anything on the board, let's forget about hypocrisy or phoniness or any of these things. Let's just talk for a moment and think about simulation. What is a simulation?
Just to try to make something the same as something else, to duplicate.
Yeah, to try to duplicate something. Recreate something. Good. Real good. Anyone else? Okay. That's okay, because that's very good.
Simulation's a model.
A model, yeah. Yep. If Dennis Bray was here, I'm sure he'd jump all over that, because I think every 6 months he has to actually, all the pilots, over a period of time, all the pilots have to be checked out, and sometimes there's part of it where they actually have a ride-along. Somebody rides with them in the plane. But there's other things that they have to do where they go into a flight simulator. Now, nobody goes into a flight simulator walking up the steps into it saying, "I'm a hypocrite. I'm going into hypocrisy." No, they're going into a simulation. There's nothing wrong with it. But everything in that simulation is designed to resemble the real thing. Now, we're not after the element of something real and something phony. Why? The context tells you we're not after anything phony or something being compared. There's no comparison to phoniness and reality here. And we know that because the context forbids it. The context tells you, let love be, all right? Love is already up. It's operating properly. There's no phoniness to it. There's no pretense to it. There's no hypocrisy to it whatsoever. So that element is gone from the definition. The context forbids it. So the context is narrowing your understanding of a word down. So we're not after that part of dissimulation. Dissimulation means something else, though. Just like Cecil brought out, a simulation, a way to produce something very similar to something else. So, granted, the most when you see the word simulation, which goes with the word dissimulation, the most common definition is that of a false pretense, which is where the term gets its similarity to that idea of hypocrisy. But as I said, we know that's not what we're dealing with here, or else the King James translators. This is another thing that I laugh at sometimes because I think it's funny when people say, well, it shouldn't have been that word, it should have been this word, as if the King James translators didn't have that available. Well, they did have hypocrisy available, and you can do it on your own, but you can get a hold of Strong's or some good concordance, and you'll be able to find the use of the word hypocrisy and hypocrite comes up in your Bible. They had it readily available. And in fact, the truth of the matter is, in this verse, everything in the Greek, if you just went by the Greek word alone, was screaming at the King James translators to translate that word hypocrisy. And yet they didn't do it. And that's because they saw something in the context that wouldn't allow that to be done. So we're not after the most common of all definitions that the word dissimulation or even the word simulate could have. But the word simulation has another meaning, just somewhat less common. It's still, in my OED, you had like the Roman numeral 1 and you had like A, B, C, D and a bunch of definitions. This one was just the second one down in the first group. So it's not all that uncommon to the word. So it is not, it's not the most common way that we talk about dissimulation or assimilation, but a somewhat less common, somewhat less than the most common meaning is that assimilation is the issue of bringing into existence something that is similar to something else. It's real simple. The issue of bringing into existence something that is similar to something else. And that's not, that doesn't have any of this phoniness, shamness, pretense, hypocrisy, none of that. But simulation can mean the issue of bringing into existence something that is similar to something else. And by the way, it can be used in a sense where there is absolutely no pretense, no pretending, not even in the way I talk to you about going into a flight simulator. It can be used when there is no intention to deceive. Simulation can be used where there is no falsely assuming of anything going on. The word simulation, far from the word hypocrisy, you take a look at the word hypocrisy and you immediately are thinking something bad. But simulation can have the meaning of something very good. Not that I'm trying to put on a false mask, but that I am trying to become similar to what I need to be. I need to be similar to that. I need to be the same as that. And so therefore, it can be used in a sense where a very simple and honest definition is in view. It can carry the simple and honest meaning, listen, of imitating the behavior of something. Imitating the behavior of something, and is used that very way, listen carefully. And by the way, this came right out of the OED, what I'm about to say. Simulation can be used to imitate the behavior of something, and indeed it is used that very way, listen, for the purpose of training military personnel. And I'm not trying to bring this out as the big issue here, it's not, but it's just rather interesting that our sonship decision-making skills, as I said on Sunday, are training you for a fight you've got coming you can't imagine. And it could be used in the sense of say, this sentence. I came up with this one. Chess, which I love the game of chess. I don't have any time to devote to it. And I got a computer game where I was getting whomped by the computer. And then I didn't even know there were settings for this, but I looked in my settings and I found out that I was playing a 10-year-old girl. And she was killing me. But listen to this sentence. Chess was invented for the purpose of simulating warfare strategy. And by the way, it was. Chess was invented for the purpose of simulating warfare strategy. Now, there's nothing evil, wrong, horrible about any of that. But the word simulate or simulation is involved with it in a good sense. And that's exactly what's going on here. This isn't in a bad sense. Let love be without dissimulation. And simulation here isn't being used in a sense of hypocrisy. So when you put the English prefix dis with the word simulation, dissimulation is the issue of saying that something that should be similar is not similar. Let love be without dissimulation. A dissimulation, therefore, let's get a more working definition of it. As I say, again, just to ramp up to this, when you take that prefix English word dis, combine that with simulation, dissimulation, it can be used in a context of saying that something that should be similar isn't similar. A dissimulation, therefore, is the issue of failing to fully simulate something. That's what Paul's after. That's what your father's after here in telling you, let love be without dissimulation. Son, I know you've got one part of this, but don't fail to fully simulate something else with it. And with dissimulation, I know I've left it. We've got one other piece we're going to put to this. With dissimulation, you've got, when something can be described as being with dissimulation, you've got something in existence that exists either a partial simulation of something, or that exists as a defective simulation of something. So when you're being exhorted, let love be without dissimulation, you're being exhorted that what you've got could exist either partial, it's only partial, or it could be defective, which the more heavy of the two would be partial for our context. But defective works as well, because having only the selfless aspect to godly love, and you're going to kind of limp your way through verses 11 through 16, not being able to deal with them quite as, certainly not effectually. But there's what he's saying. And hopefully, I'm hoping that you're grasping that there really is no corrective measure that Paul is going into with him here, or that our Father is exhorting us to here. He's just simply coming along and telling us to don't fail to fully simulate godly love. And the way you would do that is to not get the second major feature to it. This is something that can exist as it sits now in you in Romans 8 or Romans 12 and verse 8. It sits only partial. Now, granted, there's, if my understanding is correct, there's seven whole features, major features to godly love. But you only need the first two to be able to have it in a sufficient enough fullness to be able to do the remaining things that godly wisdom, the receiving of the instruction of wisdom, is designed for us to do with it. To be that powerful sonship decision-making skill that it is to us. And so with dissimulation, you've got something in existence. It's therefore the issue of failing to fully simulate something in existence that exists either as either a partial simulation of something, or it exists as a defective simulation of something. Does that make sense? See that? All right. Now, bear in mind that we have to keep everything here in its proper context. This has been the theme of the night, basically. And in our context, we've got to remember that the aim and the goal, the objective, the very purpose for our sonship education was stated to us back there in Romans chapter 8 and in verse 29. I'm sorry. Yes, verse 29. For whom he did foreknow, he also did predestinate to be what? Conformed to the image of his Son, capital S Son, the Lord Jesus Christ, that he, Jesus Christ, might be the firstborn among many brethren. All right? Bear in mind that that can be the stated objective and goal and purpose of our sonship education, being conformed to the image of God's Son. And it starts out with our being conformed to the issue of his godly love. And verse 3 through verse 8 have provided for us to be conformed to the issue of the selfless aspect of his godly love. Now verse 9 is coming along and saying, don't let love be without dissimulation, son. That is, don't stop the similarity between you and Christ's love with just selflessness, but there's more to his love than that. There's at least one more major feature, one more major characteristic or component to his love that's going to team up with selflessness. And when it comes to our conformity to his image, we've got to make sure that we've got those two characteristics in existence. And of course, that second feature, we've already identified that second major characteristic is the issue of godly love being kind. Kindness, loving kindness. And so we're going to have selflessness and kindness together. And with those, we're going to be able to go on and get the remainder of our receiving of our instruction of wisdom with that. But if we don't, we're going to allow that love to stand in dissimulation or with dissimulation. It's going to have failed to be fully simulated. It's going to either exist as partial or as defective. And that's what you're being exhorted to. And that's, I don't know if you can see it or not, but that's far different than coming along and saying, let love be without hypocrisy, as if you've been hypocritical with it. So our godly love needs to be without dissimulation. In other words, we now need to complete the simulation. The conforming into the similarity, into the image of God's Son. And by the rest of what verse 9 goes on and says, it clues us in, so to speak, on this second feature or characteristic of godly love that involves taking a further matter of thinking, that not only involves thinking less of ourselves, as we were taught up there in verse 3, but it's going to involve us thinking in a particular way now in terms of not only thinking less of ourselves, but now thinking by the kind of thinking we're going to do, it produces an abhorrence. Look again at verse 9. Abhor that which is evil. Cleave to that which is good. And the way we're not going to allow our love to be dissimulated is to start now in our thinking the process of what our Father understands, not what man tells us, but what our Father understands as an issue of abhorring some things. Again, this is information that is not commonly taught in public school systems, except to abhor things that don't matter, and they major on what doesn't matter. But when you're trying to get little Johnny to not have any crack-ups along the way, why, you don't want to say anything negative to him. Well, your Father's coming along here and saying, well, son, if you're going to love the way I love, you're going to have to abhor some things. Far different from the media perspective that they give on Jesus. That he just loved them all. All inclusive. You know, tolerated everything. Well, if he tolerated everything and everyone, then why in God's name did he go to that cross? What a waste of time and a stupid thing to do when he could have avoided it. If the whole issue was just tolerate everyone and everything. He so was intolerant of sin that he let himself be beaten and nailed to a cross for it. Some of these things just don't get across sometimes. But it produces, we have to have an abhorrence for some things. And then at the same time, to use that old kind of older English expression form of cleave, we have to have a clevity for another thing. And the thing that kindness abhors is evil. And the thing that kindness has a clevity for is goodness. And loving kindness thinks that way. That's the way loving kindness, God's loving kindness thinks. What you would imagine is that when it comes to that issue, let's see if I can go back just to the passage here. What you would imagine, the way most people think today, then, and superimpose their view of God on mankind, is that when it comes to being kind, all you would have is, you wouldn't have any of this, you would just have that. That kindness is cleaving to that which is good, being good and kind. But kindness has a side to it that says, to be truly kind, you have to abhor that which is evil. And by the way, I don't know if you have realized it or not, do a little work on that word, abhor. That is put in the strongest of terms when you abhor something. You're not just mildly you just don't mildly dislike it. It's not just like, well, it's close to the color I'd like, but I can tolerate. There's no tolerance for the abhorrence. You abhor that which is evil, cleave to that which is good. So that's the kind of thinking that not only involves what verses 3 through 8 produced, but now is going to add to that. It's going to give another dimension to that. And the thing, like I said, that loving kindness, the way it thinks, God's loving kindness thinks just that way. So therefore, godly love existing only, if it stands only with the feature of selflessness, then it is dissimulated. If godly love stands with only the feature of selflessness, and if this second characteristic of godly love, the kindness, isn't effectually working and established within our inner man, then we cannot go on any further in our sonship life without our love being dissimilar to the love that our Father himself has, and to the dissimilar to the love that his Son, the Lord Jesus Christ himself, has. In other words, his loving kindness and the Lord's loving kindness. If we fail to get this next piece, then we're going to be dissimilar to that. And that has to be avoided at all costs here. So when godly love exists, both with the feature of selflessness and the feature of kindness, and they're together, then you are letting love be without dissimulation. That's what that first sentence of verse 9 is telling you. When you simply have in existence godly selfless love and godly loving kindness, those existing together, you are letting love be without dissimulation. And really, with that exhortation there, that immediately comes along and tells you it's not sufficient just to have the first feature of godly love. Rather, it will stand only partial. That would stand only as defective unless you add to that the selfless feature, add to the selfless feature the kindness that now we're going to enter into beginning next time. And that prompts you then, that first little five-letter sentence prompts you to immediately desire, your desire now should be straining to go on and acquire loving kindness along with the selflessness, because you now know what kind of power that thing has to produce a skill set in you that your father looks at and says, that's my wisdom operating in my son. That's my wisdom operating in my daughter. That's an intelligent understanding of what that wisdom is about. And not just coming along saying, that's a wise guy. Well, any problems, any questions, anything along those lines? I think that's going to be a good place to stop tonight, even though we might be a little early. You can handle the first sentence. Got it. Huh? Finally. It's really not a tough thing at all if you let the context rule the day. If you don't, you're going to wind up being one of those wise guys, a King James corrector, a Bible corrector, and probably make lots of money off of your corrected translation. All right, well, I'm going to stop there tonight, and we'll pick up and begin looking at the thinking aspect of abhorring that which is evil, cleaving to that which is good, beginning on Sunday morning. And unfortunately, we'll be taking a break there, so we'll probably just be able to get some things underway on Sunday morning, and then we'll, I would expect in 2 weeks, have a decent kind of review, and then we'll carry on. But as you see, things are going to go a little more rapidly than they have in verses 3 through 8. All right, good enough. We'll stop right there.